We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard. After being in Rwanda, this scripture just jumped out at me for that reason, because now that's what I get to do. I get to proclaim what we saw and heard so that we can build the fellowship of Christian people, of people trying to help each other all around the world. But also, that scripture has a lot of light and darkness in it. And in Rwanda, that was a vivid image. We saw so many patterns of black and white like this. And I asked someone why, because everywhere there was black and white. And they told us, because always after the greatest darkness, the light will come. It was the most incredible thing to hear from people who walked through that darkness of the genocide in 1994. And it was incredibly inspiring. So I got to travel to Rwanda in late February and early March of this year, and it was a learning tour. We call them that because we don't go with the answers. We go to see the people and the work and to learn from them, and then come back and tell you what we've seen and heard, and absolutely to tell you what your donations are doing when you give to something like Grow Hope and MCC. But we're not doing it. The people there are doing it. So it's a very humbling thing to see. And I hope that through this series of stories, you can see what's happening. So let's get the PowerPoint going. Small village. All the people in the teal colored shirts are farmers, and they're graduating from a two-year-long MCC program in conservation agriculture, and we got to go and watch their graduation. Okay, this went on and on, so we can go to the next slide now. I am not a dancer. I'm very Mennonite that way, traditional, you know, grew up in a family where we didn't dance. They had me dancing. It was just joyous. We came into the village. MCC, through its local partners there, have been supporting this conservation agriculture program for 2 years to help the people to grow food. There were 31 graduates of this intensive program. But I'll tell you a little bit. This is our learning tour group and a few of the MCC staff people. These are all people from Alberta, except for the staff people from MCC. And all of us are Grow Hope supporters. So we went to see what was happening. We'll flip to the next slide, because we are the most boring part of the whole thing. When you go to Rwanda, the first thing that people say is, oh, that's a dangerous place, because the first thing we think of is the genocide. Most of us in 1994 remember listening with horror to what was happening. The Hutus were killing Tutsis, and in 100 days, over 1 million people were killed. And at that time, Rwanda had a population of 8 million. So you can imagine, 1 in 8 was killed. And it was neighbors turning against neighbors, armies fighting, you name it. It was a horrendous thing. So the first thing that we did when we went to Rwanda is we went to the Genocide Memorial Museum to learn about the history. MCC has been in Rwanda for 26 years. So we've been there since just after the genocide. And it's because local partners, after that genocide, so many churches got together and said, we have to do something to prevent this from ever happening again. We need to build peace. But they were weak, they were poor, and it was chaotic. So they banded together, a lot of small groups, and they asked MCC to walk alongside. So they are our partners. So one of the first things that we found out was that when the genocide occurred, and this was heartbreaking to me, I can't get my head around it, Rwanda was 90% Christian. and they had this terrible genocide. It's very sobering because it makes me look at us and ask questions too. What can happen in a Christian community that they're willing to kill their neighbors? Leading up to and during the genocide, the church was silent and sometimes even complicit in the hatred and violence. And today, this church, the same churches, are working hard to reconcile, to rebuild, to understand, and to make sure this never, ever happens again. So after we had gone through the memorial and learned about the history, we went outside. This is a mass grave that is still open because bodies are still being recovered, and they're trying to identify them and have services for them. The woman on the far right-hand side is a genocide survivor. She wasn't part of our group. She just joined us because she saw we were all given roses that we could lay down on this grave. And so she joined us and had a rose, and then she was crying. So one person from our group went over and put her arms around her and listened to her story. She was attacked and brutalized and cut with machetes and thrown into a pit of other victims. She wasn't dead, so she managed to crawl out and survive. But she says she comes to the memorial often as a way of healing and to pray and to talk. And it was wonderful for us to be able to hear her story and cry with her. The guide, he's taking the picture, so he's not in the picture at the time. He was in his probably mid-30s, so he would have been a small child when the genocide happened. He said he was saved by his neighbor. His neighbor came and took him into his own house and hid him for 3 months. And the man said, "But I don't know how to think about my neighbor because he's the same man that probably killed my family, but he saved me." So he said, "He's both a monster and an angel, and how do I reconcile this?" And he said, "This is the story of our whole country." So we'll go to the next slide. This was the background. So MCC is coming to help groups build peace after this. And the first thing that our partners told us, there is a saying in Rwanda, you can't have peace if you are hungry. So much of our work begins with addressing food security. This is Vincent on the left. He's a farmer, and I got to tour his farm. He was one of the farmers who just graduated from that two-year program. Over the 2 years, he's learned techniques like mulching, so putting grass and all your garden waste onto the soil to improve the soil and to retain moisture. He's learned intercropping, so you plant your corn and your beans together so that the beans fix the nitrogen and help the corn, and then the beans can grow up the corn stalks. Except they call it maize, and it really doesn't taste like our corn. I'll get to that later. But Vincent here is showing us how the beans climb up the old stalks. And he told us that his yields have more than doubled on his farm. He only has 0.7 of an acre. Something about Rwanda, it's a tiny country. It would fit between Calgary and Red Deer. It's covered in hills, like it's a land of thousands of hills. And if you imagine that small place between Calgary and Red Deer, right now it has 14 million people. So farmers here have about an acre of land or less. So he has managed to more than double his yield. And as a master farmer graduating from this program, he had to pledge and commit to share his knowledge by instructing at least 5 other farmers after he graduates. Another really interesting thing is that over 70% of these smallholder farmers are women. I just happened to visit on Vincent's farm, but the vast majority are women because they're feeding their families and trying to earn enough to make a living. And a lot of times the men are trying to find other jobs. So it's a really intertwined system. Another really interesting thing here is that usually men would grow the crop, the maize crop, because it's the cash crop. So they would take the very, very best land that they had, and their wives would have to try and grow the vegetables and beans right around the house where the land wasn't good. But with intercropping, one of the things Vincent told me, he said, my wife and I work together now because she's growing beans in amongst the maize. We have to work together all the time, so now we talk. So now we have peace in our house. It's amazing. Just doing something like this, you don't realize what some of the spin-offs and ripple effects are. But growing food and teaching conservation agriculture helps people have enough food, which helps toward peace, but it also helps peace in the family because they have to work together. We'll turn to the next. This is a comparison field. On the left-hand side is the conservation agriculture plot. That's our test plot that MCC went in and has been doing for the whole time that they were teaching the farmers. And right beside it, they did traditional agriculture so that they could see the difference. It's unbelievable. One of the farmers showed us the maize cob from her conservation plot was this big. The one from the traditional plot was not even half the size. But when a farmer changes techniques and your yield increases, there are ripple effects and some new challenges will surface. And I had to think of my grandpa, because when we first moved out and lived on the farm, my grandpa was doing summer fallow. He was plowing that field over and over and over again till it was perfect black dusty dirt. And then the wind would come up and the dirt would leave. Almost no farmers in that area do that anymore. And even when we moved onto the farm together with grandpa, we quit doing that. And we started leaving the stubble on the land so that the land couldn't blow away. We started leaving more of the straw there to hold the moisture in. When you do that, when these small farmers started doing this, there were conflicts. Because just like my grandpa's place, if you stop summer following, your weeds are gonna blow onto my neighbor's yard, right? So then you have neighbors at each other. Here, the neighbors started looking at each other and saying, what you're doing is crazy, that doesn't work. They'd make fun of them, they'd start yelling at them if their goat got out and got into their land. Conflicts started happening between farmers. So our partners said, you can't just teach farmers new techniques, you also have to teach them conflict resolution because they have to be able to talk to their neighbors about what they're doing. So that became part of the training that these farmers take, is how do you talk when conflicts arise? Those skills were strengthening the communities and were addressing both the historical trauma of conflict and also helping with the disagreements that were coming up because now we're introducing new methods and trying to get more people to try them. Another ripple effect, and we'll turn to the next. When your crop starts producing more and all of a sudden you're making a little bit more money, what do you do with it? Well, we needed conflict resolution because that's what husbands and wives were fighting about then. What do you do with the money? So that helped the conflict resolution. But these people in the small villages, they had no place to save their money. They had no bank. So if you've never had extra money, when you get extra money, the smart thing to do was to spend it so you wouldn't lose it or it wouldn't get stolen. So they would just immediately spend their money, but then all of a sudden school would start and they wouldn't have the money to buy the things to send their kids to school. So the partners and MCC got together and said, we need small ways to save money. So they started village savings and loans groups, small groups of about 15 families. They have very simple rules when they all get together. They get together once a week, they hold each other accountable. They all can put a certain amount of money into the pot. It gets taken to a bank. They write everything down. This man is showing us his bank ledger. And a lot of these people, because of the genocide, they grew up illiterate. So they have a little stamp. Every time you put in a certain amount of money, you get one stamp. That means that you bought one share in the bank. So he's showing us this book and explaining how they all understand how much everybody saved. And what this meant, and sometimes people could only save 25 cents. But they say we can start really small because you can save up for small loans that'll make a difference in someone's life. So when school starts, and actually the government pays school fees, but you have to buy your own school uniform. The people could save up enough that they could buy that school uniform and their child could start school in September, because they actually had that little bit of money. Or they could borrow it from the bank and then they pay it back. It works incredibly well. But what it's also done, another spin-off or a ripple effect, is that it has built stronger communities, because the people are getting together and sharing their problems with each other every week and holding each other accountable. They're also setting aside a social fund so that when a wedding or a funeral or a community event comes up, that there's a fund that they can all decide together to draw on to help their community. There's a woman in the very corner wearing that red scarf on her head. She told us that after her husband died, she was, the translation was depressed and couldn't figure out how she was going to manage. She said this Village Savings and Loan group became like a family to her. She and her son attended every week. They saved what they could, and eventually they slowly saved up money for building materials for a house. And so they would buy like one sheet of tin for the roof, a month later buy another sheet of tin, then they would buy the materials to make bricks, and they built a house. And she said, saving for life is life itself. She was very excited. And it was, they said there's hardly ever anybody that doesn't pay back, because they're all together and talking and helping each other. In the corner of that picture too, you can barely see it, between the guy in the red shirt and the guy in the blue shirt, there's a plastic bucket looking thing. Those are water filtration units. They cost about $15 each. And I think either last year or the year before, they were in that MCC Christmas giving catalog. Our farmers, when they graduate, they all get one of these given to them for in their household. The government does provide water, but you still have to go walk to the cistern to get it, and it's still not necessarily clean enough to drink. They can put it in this unit, the dirty stuff in the top, it filters out, it's clean on the bottom to drink. It's a simple technology that lasts them for years, and it makes it possible for you to have clean drinking water in your house very simply. It was exciting to see those being used in the houses all over the place. Okay, the next picture. This is my very favorite story. Some of you might have heard me tell this one already, but one of the things that we learned is that just because you teach farmers how to increase their yield, if some of them had four times the amount of maize that they used to have, it doesn't mean you've helped them solve malnutrition. And that's what happened. MCC and our partners said, yes, we're producing so much more food, but why are our children still malnourished? So part of what the farmers learn in this two-year course is basic nutrition. So this lady, the one who's bent over the pot wearing the bright flowered skirt, she's one of our master farmers. She's the one who trains in nutrition. So she trained us, and I'm gonna give you the brief training, because I think it was just brilliant. Once a day, your whole family has to have a one-pot meal that has all four colors in it. And again, she's teaching illiterate people, but she says the white color, that's your maize or your rice or your potato. That's a starch, that's for energy. So they have, the color is white, and there's an action. And I'll get you all to do the action. It's for energy, so you go like this. Oh, come on. I know there's a little more energy out there. So she got all the people doing that as she's training people. Then the next color is brown. So there's kidney beans or other beans or meat. They don't eat very much meat at all because they have no refrigeration and there's other uses for those animals. And I'll get to that. But so you put your beans or your meat into the pot, and that's for building muscle. Okay, we've got a few people that have built muscle here. The next one is greens, and that's for safety. And that's safety from diseases, because you're getting the vitamins and minerals that you need. And then the last one was red and orange, and that's for your fruits and vegetables. That's your eyesight. So that was how they taught people. They said, if your kids are only eating white, all they have is energy. They don't have the safety. They don't have the muscles. They can't see properly. Amazing, isn't it? So simple. And so this group demonstrated to us, we had about 50 people there. The farmers were there, The MCC partners were there, and then our group of 16 travelers was there. And 1 hour, one pot over a fire, and they cooked us a fantastic meal. It was nutritious, really good. But then this trainer, she said, I need to stop you right here. There's one more extremely important thing. She said, if you have children in your house, you mash that so they can't pick out the vegetables. And we thought, oh, kids world over, all the same, right? And I was looking at some of the adults and saying, you need to mash yours too, but anyway. This was just so brilliant, and it was thought up by the local partners. They're the ones who know how to teach people and what's gonna connect. This connected. But as I went home, I started thinking, these people are feeding their families with no refrigeration, often very poor places to store any of the food. So what do you do? And this is a very typical stove, 3 stones. And you have to somehow get wood in a country where there's 14 million people and no extra land anywhere. So it's really, really hard. And the fact that these people are doing it and their kids are thriving is just incredibly inspiring. Okay, the next one. Okay, 50% of Rwanda's population is rural and on those tiny farms, but the other 50% are in very, very crowded cities. So how do we help people there? There's vocational training. And the government and MCC and their partners are all working together to pick people that are on the very lowest end of the socioeconomic ladder. These are kids who probably wouldn't ever have been able to go to school. They find them, they identify them. These are from about age, I think they said age 16 to age 30. And they put them through vocational training. These guys, the guy on the front in the left, he was a student who came through the project, and now he's one of the instructors in training. They can fix any car. And it's unbelievable. Like, how do you learn how to fix these things, and even with computers and all that? And this is how they're learning, outside on a table. But we looked in the back, and yep, every kind of car you can imagine, and motorbikes, and they were getting fixed. And then these guys go out and get jobs. Then there's also, next picture. Vocational training for, they're teaching culinary arts. So these are all learning to be chefs. They have 2 little stoves in the back corner. And they said, this program will turn out government certified chefs that can work in hotels. And they do it with very little. And on the other side is hairdressing, which is big, big business. And a lot of people earn their living that way. 92% of their graduates go on to earn a living doing their area of study. And they said, and another 7% get jobs in other areas, and then we have about 2% that can't find a job. I wish we had that kind of success here. And they really are producing top quality mechanics and chefs. And when we saw their libraries, we thought, these people work hard. They really know what they're doing. Okay, next picture. Friends Peace House, peace clubs and libraries. When you have a trauma like the genocide, which is only 30 years ago, you have a whole population that is living with PTSD and trauma. Anybody you see that's over age 30 went through that hell. And children were raised by people that were traumatized like this. So having a place, a peace library, where people can come and talk about peace and get books about it and learn about it. And after school, this is free for kids to come. And they said they get about 250 kids in Kigali who come to this peace library every year, completely voluntary. The teachers will read stories with them, and they read in both their native language, which is Kinyarwandan, and they also read in English to help them learn their English so that they can do better in school. It's an amazing thing, and the stories they're reading are peace stories that are local that they've translated into their languages. So they're not taking our books from our country and reading them. They're reading their own stuff, and it's helping the kids. But the other thing they do is they give the kids time to act out skits, things that they've seen at home. And so they acted out a skit for us, and they were amazing actors. But what they acted out was a a drunken brawl and buying liquor and going home. And we talked to the teacher about that. And she said, they're acting out what they're seeing at home, and then we talk about it together with them. We talk about what's a peaceful response, what's appropriate for a child, how do you keep yourself safe, how do you help your family? And it's making a difference. Just incredible. These teachers are brilliant with what they're doing and how it's helping families, and families are supporting this. So it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's promoting a culture of peace in a place that was anything but peaceful. And I think back to, you know, when you change a farming practice, there's pushback. They're changing their whole culture, and it's soaked out into the society. If you walk down the street in Rwanda, in Kigali, you can walk up to anybody and say, are you Hutu or Tutsi? And they'll look at you and say, we don't ask that question. We are all Rwandan. It's just beautiful. So they've gone a long way in 30 years. Next picture, there's those of us who went. These are our MCC staff in Rwanda. The man on the left here, he's going to be speaking at the Intune conference that's coming up in October. He'll be speaking via Zoom, unfortunately, but he has a doctorate in peace studies, peace and conflict mediation. His story is phenomenal, and he's on our team. It's just the best person that we could ever have working for us. And Mutaka, standing right beside him, she's an agronomist, so she goes to all the Grow Hope farms. She's Rwandan, she knows what she's talking about. She's brilliant. And then we have our office staff. So to conclude this, I want to just talk a little bit about the church and what we came back with. Like I said, it's a learning tour. So what did we come back with here? I came back incredibly inspired to speak out against hate. What happened there can happen here. Going through the Genocide Museum and seeing it, it's not just something that happens in Africa. It's happening here. We have hate speech. It happens over decades. What happened there started with colonization and dividing people. It wasn't two tribes. It wasn't Hutu and Tutsi. That was imposed by the Belgian government when they gave everybody identity cards and started separating the people and setting them up against each other. We have to be careful. This happens here too. So how do we find places to change our culture, to speak out against hate? Their example was so incredible. I think of one of the women farmers that I asked. I said, when you have to go out and teach five more farmers, that's hard. How do you do that? And she looked at me and laughed. And she said, it's simple. The first year they watch me, they tell me I'm crazy. The second year they watch me and they try and copy me without telling me. The third year they come to me and ask me to teach them. And I thought, wow, there was so much joy in how she told me that. And I thought, if our churches could be places of joy and peace, people think we're crazy, maybe they'll come. Maybe they will eventually come and ask us and we can say, yes, we will share this with you. It's a neat model. Another thing that we can do, they told us there, the best thing when you're doing donations anywhere, they said, where needed most? They said, the people we have in those countries are the experts. They know what they need. So for us to say, oh, I would love to give you this special high-tech something or other, well, that might not be what's going to work there. So we need to listen to them. And MCC is trying really hard to do that. Although sometimes we want to say, well, we can give you this high efficiency stove and we're going to make 1,000 of them and just bring them. No, we have to listen to what they ask for and do it their way. I think the biggest thing that I take back home is the idea that we have to learn how to have those hard conversations and to speak into the hate that we see. There's ways to do it. There's advocacy. There's ways just to reach out to your neighbor and say, I'm not going to argue. I want to hear what you say, and we can disagree. That's okay. But how do we do that? How can we be that voice of peace into a world that is needing it so badly? I'd like to bow together and pray. Thank you, Lord, for our brothers and sisters in Rwanda, for the things that they have gone through and what they've learned through it, and what they're so very willing to share with us and teach us. Help us to listen. Help us to listen well enough that we can try planting peace at home, that we can reach out to our neighbors and share the joy that you have and the different way of doing things. We ask that you be with these people who are still so much struggling to earn a living, to bring themselves up out of the poverty and to reach out to their neighbors. We thank you for the wonderful things that we're seeing happening. And we ask that you bless them in their reaching out to another five and another five. Thank you for this chance to share what we have seen and heard. Amen. And I have some things up front here from Rwanda. Feel free to come take a good look afterwards and ask me questions. There's stories attached to everything, and so many good stories. You can ask me what a Rwandan can carry on a bicycle, and it will blow your mind. And there's one final video here. This is a church that we got to worship in the last day, the kids' choir. Very joyful, very welcoming. And there's two little kids in the front that don't want to participate, so I thought, and it felt like home. So thank you very much.